This is Prop Points on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Happy Tuesday, everyone. Welcome into Prop Points here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Nick Whalen back with my guy, Brandon Kravitz, still filling in for our good pal, Jeff Erickson. Brandon, great to be back with you, man. Looking forward to starting off the show, recapping an exciting Game 5 in the NBA Finals last night. Talk a little bit about the Kevin Durant sweepstakes. I think it's a sweepstakes, right? It's still Kevin Durant. Talk about the odds board for where KD may end up as that market continues to catch fire. Play a little Rate That Prop later in the show. Take a look at some early numbers for Game 6 of the NBA Finals, which comes at us on Thursday night from Indianapolis. We'll mix in some NFL props as well. We've got a Stanley Cup final game, potentially the last game of the NHL season tonight. Paul Bruno from RotoWire, he's going to stop by for a full Game 6 preview. And we'll finish out the show giving you our best bets for a packed baseball slate. Brandon, OKC officially now back in control of this series. They take a 3-2 advantage last night. This reminded me a lot of Game 1, the sloppiness from the Indiana Pacers, 23 total turnovers for Indiana. Now, what the Thunder were able to do last night is not what they were able to do in Game 1, which is capitalize on those turnovers. I believe they finished with 32 points off turnovers last night. We saw a big turnaround in terms of the three-point shooting for OKC. And yet, this was another game in this series, Brandon, where there were two or three times, you know, midway through the third quarter, early in the fourth, Thunder pushed that lead up to 10, up to 15, and you're thinking, all right, Indiana can't possibly survive that. Over and over again, the Indiana Pacers found ways to hang in this game. Very nearly covered, by the way. I know you were keeping a close eye on that. They had the ball with less than 24 seconds left. One final turnover by Ben Mathurin to end this game and allow the Thunder to run it out. Thunder cover the 9.5.
The amount of times that I have lost a cover during this postseason on one single bucket, just being one basket off, is enough to drive you batty. But I will try and put that behind me, and yeah, we'll talk about the game, but you just have to take the losses as they come. I was so impressed with OKC. I feel bad for it, not just myself with losing the plus 9.5, but anybody who decided to jump on the Pacers live because of the way that they've been able to come back in these throughout the postseason, not just in this series. This was not one of those games, though. And it's why, for me, this was the most impressive win of the series for the Oklahoma City Thunder. 70 points between SGA and J-Dub, 32 points off of Pacers turnovers, as you mentioned, 12 blocks, 15 steals. They withstand that comeback, which it has been the Pacers' signature this postseason. When you add all of that together, this is 100% the most Thunder-like game that we have seen from OKC. And it does feel like perhaps because they were able to put that together, the series could be over.
It certainly could be. It certainly could be. But at the same time, Brandon, kind of going back to what we were talking about with the Pacers making those runs, like this felt like a game that OKC should have won by 20 to 25, right? Just in terms of how the game felt watching it, not taking anything away from the Thunder. If anything, it's a compliment to Indiana. When you get Tyrese Haliburton not making a single field goal, he goes 0 of 6 from the field. Obviously, he was compromised. We got the word late in the second quarter, dealing with some calf tightness, clearly wasn't himself. But if you had told me Tyrese Haliburton's stat line coming into this game, I would say there's no way that this cover is coming down to the final 20 seconds.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that concerns me moving forward here is that we don't know that Tyrese Haliburton is going to be able to come back to full health. Right. But, you know, just going back to the game itself and how this all transpired, even though they were close, it's still a loss, you know, even though they were able to get within a bucket from covering that spread. I think it shows the resilience of the Indiana Pacers. Got to give J-Dub his flowers, though. He is the modern-day Scottie Pippen. If you are watching or listening to us right now and you were not able to watch Scottie Pippen during his prime, this is basically the carbon copy. I actually think J-Dub probably has a little more offensive upside, but it's also a different era of NBA basketball. Yeah. We are seeing him really develop into the best number two in the NBA. I don't think it's overreactionary to say that. Jaylen Brown still has a claim to that crown, but he's a two-way beast. He's great in isolation. He was getting buckets left and right. last night, and he does it in a variety of ways. He can be powerful towards the rim. He's crafty, catch and shoot opportunities. He had a big three in the fourth quarter when the Pacers had cut that deficit down to two. That really started to turn things back into OKC's favor. Really just a flawless performance from an all-NBA Robin. And keep in mind, Nick, this guy is just 24 years old doing all of this.
Yeah, I saw the Scottie Pippen comps last night. I understand that to some degree. I was trying to come up with my own comp. In terms of his game, like I think of what he brings to this team, Scottie Pippen is totally apt. You know, I think he's been an underrated defender, if anything, in the early stages of his career. And obviously that's kind of what you think of with Scottie Pippen, you know, being the perfect number two to Michael Jordan. His game is a little Paul Pierce-y to me, like the body style, you know, kind of a bigger dude. You know, Pierce maybe didn't have quite as much muscle, especially later in his career. But, you know, you go back and watch like 2006 Paul Pierce when he was running things for the Celtics. Like that's kind of the vibe I was getting from Jalen Williams. But you're right, man. We saw the total package from Jalen Williams, he hasn't been overly aggressive hunting threes, you know, throughout these playoffs, throughout this series, drained three of them last night. It feels like his go-to shot now is that kind of swooping lefty layup where he, you know, gets it high off the glass, gets it over Siakam, over Miles Turner. That seems to just be completely dialed in. And, you know, you mentioned that J-Dub three, that came after OKC blew a 15-point lead. All of a sudden, Indiana whittled it down, I believe, all the way to four. OKC goes back up 10 early in the fourth quarter. Indy immediately goes on an 11-3 run. It's 95-93 with about 8 minutes left. And that was the inflection point to me for OKC, because anybody who's watched the Pacers throughout these playoffs is thinking, here we go again. How is this going to happen? OKC seemed like they were in full control. All of a sudden now it looks like Indiana's going to be in position to maybe steal another game. But OKC finally had a response. That Jalen Williams three, which came off of an offensive rebound, by the way. And then right after that, Cason Wallace, a steal and a dunk to push it back up to seven. A couple minutes later, Indiana turns it over on four straight possessions, and it was pretty much over at that point.
I think this has been mentioned several times already on this channel today, but let me be the next in a long line of people bringing up what is the most impressive stat of all of this with J-Dub, is that he becomes the fifth player in NBA history to score at least 25 points in three straight finals games before the age of 25. The other four are Kyrie Irving, Kevin Durant, Shaquille O'Neal, and Dwayne Wade. That is an exclusive list. Also among the youngest players with a 40-point game in the NBA Finals, Jerry West, Russell Westbrook, Rick Barry, and Magic Johnson on that list. But I think you mentioned another name that is a really big reason as to why OKC was able to pull this off. And this is where I think if you're an Indiana backer, you can feel like, okay, that was more of an Oklahoma thing than a series thing. Aaron Wiggins, games two and game five, both played in Oklahoma, totaled 32 points, 10 of 21 from the field, 9 of 15 from deep. The other one, Cason Wallace, who has been helping out defensively, has been a non-factor on offense and scored, he had zero threes prior to game five. He was 3 of 4 from deep last night. The role players showed up in a big way when they were needed the most.
Yeah, lid was finally off the hoop for Cason Wallace, who hit three big threes. Could not hit anything from beyond the arc, even dating back to the end of that Minnesota series. And we knew OKC would have to increase the volume, right? 3 of 17 from beyond the arc in game four. I still don't really understand how they won that game, you know, with that kind of shooting, with only 11 assists as a team. Like I had to go to Stathead, Brandon, to look into how rare that is. So in the last five NBA seasons, including this season, there have only been 27 instances of a team taking 17 or fewer threes in an NBA game. That's regular season or playoffs. That's like 7,000 NBA games. And the Oklahoma City Thunder did that in a finals game and still won. It was the first time since 2018 that any team had a game in which they took 17 or fewer threes and had 11 or fewer assists. No games other than game four in the last 7 years even met that criteria. So it was good to see that shooting and that volume come back around for OKC. Folks, are you still using your buddy's gut instinct as your betting strategy? Come on, you deserve better than that. RotoWire has the real tools the pros use: rankings, projections, updates, data that doesn't sleep. Whether you're making picks, setting your fantasy lineup, or placing bets, our award-winning insights give you the edge you need. Get started today by heading over to rotowire.com and entering the code ROTO15. Put that in at checkout. Get 15% off any RotoWire product. All right, Brandon, we'll talk a little bit more about this series coming up. Got some props that we need to rate ahead of game six, but the Kevin Durant market starting to heat up, you know, starting to see some reports that maybe a trade could come as soon as this week. look at the board right now. We've had some movement in terms of Kevin Durant next team, the Miami Heat. Right now, the favorite at 2-1, the Rockets +250, the Spurs 3-1. Those are the three teams Durant has expressed interest in. Timberwolves, though, still hanging around at +350.
I feel pretty confident in my read on this. The Miami Heat move to me would be a complete waste of time for everybody. That doesn't move the needle for me in the Eastern Conference. As wide open, it's the phrasing that everybody's using these days, as the Eastern Conference is, I still don't think it has them cracking the top five in the conference. The Rockets need him the most. I think the Spurs become the most dangerous with him. So that's the way I kind of break this down. The Heat move is pointless. Yeah. The Rockets need him the most. And the Spurs with Kevin Durant become an absolute factor in the West. But I don't think it's a move the Spurs need to make, which is why you're seeing Shams come out and say it's probably not going to happen, because I think the price tag is too high and the Spurs mm-hmm. can probably build a championship caliber roster without adding Kevin Durant.
Well, I think the Spurs might have their sights set elsewhere, maybe going even bigger fish hunting this offseason if they can indeed pry Giannis away from Milwaukee. And you're right. I mean, the reporting around this, I called it a sweepstakes in the intro, Brandon. Nobody seems to be putting a sweepstakes level offer on the table. You know, the Rockets have had a standing offer for weeks that has not been accepted. And there does not necessarily seem to be the kind of bidding war going on for Kevin Durant that the Phoenix Suns perhaps had hoped would be the case. All right, we got to hit our first break. We're going to play a game of Rate That Prop. When we come back, take a look at some props for Game 6 of the NBA Finals, NFL season-long props as well. It's all coming up next here on Prop Points.
Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Back here on Prop Points on the sports betting network. Show is rolling along. Nick Whalen, Brandon Kravitz here with you. Going to play a game of Rate That Prop. And Brandon, we are going to split our attention between Game 6 of the NBA Finals and the NFL. Take a look at some season-long player props. So we'll start with basketball, and look, the game is pretty simple here. Our producer, Michael Cohen, he picks out some props. You and I go in, we give them a rating, 1 through 5. If it's a 1, you're not playing it. It's a bad prop. If it's a 2, maybe you're thinking about it, but ultimately you're probably passing. A 3, right on the borderline, you lean toward playing it. 4, yep, that one's going to be on the card. And 5 is a no-doubter. You are sprinting to the window at the Circus Sportsbook to get this bet in. So let's start on the NBA side of things. Where are we going first?
Yeah, Michael and I put in a lot of work to make sure that we could twist your mind into a pretzel here, really get you thinking heading into a game 6 a couple of nights from now. We're going to start with J-Dub. He's the man of the hour after dropping 40 points last night. 25 plus at +110 is the prop that we're rating here. He's coming off of that 40-point outing. He has gone over 24.5 in each of his last 3 in this series. So how do you rate that prop, Nick Whalen?
Yeah, well, I like this idea that the whole goal is to just like confuse the host as much as possible. Like, let's find the most difficult props out there. This one, I'm giving it 3 out of 5. I thought about going 4 out of 5, but we're knocking this one down to a 3. Like you said, he's now gone over this number in 3 straight, 26, 27, and then 40 points last night in game 5. The finishing at the rim has been elite, especially with that offhand. You know, the three-point shooting feels like it's coming around. He's comfortable in the mid-range. Jalen Williams, to me, seems like the most confident player right now for OKC offensively, and that's saying a lot because SGA, you know, continues to deal with Andrew Nembhard, and we're seeing OKC have to go to semi-extreme lengths just to kind of force certain matchups for SGA, whereas Jalen Williams is like, put whoever you want in front of me. You know, if you got a smaller guy on me, I'm going to bully him to the rim. If it's somebody who's a little bit bigger, I can take him off the dribble. I can get to my spot. So I like this one overall. I think Jalen Williams continues to pick up confidence. I think he was one of the big swing pieces for OKC coming into these playoffs, coming into this series. Obviously, was really disappointing as the number 2 guy last year, but it feels like he is taking this next step in front of our eyes. And outside of, you know, everything that we've seen from him off the dribble, finishing, things like that, I think maybe the most important aspect of this prop, Brandon, is that he is getting to the line a ton. He's building in a really nice floor if you're looking at points props for Jalen Williams. 11, 11, and 12 free throw attempts over these last three finals games, had 13 total free throw attempts over the first two games. So if that continues in game six in Indiana, and I don't see why it wouldn't, we're going to play this one. 3 out of 5.
I don't blame you. And he's putting some pressure on SGA, his teammate, in terms of the NBA Finals MVP market. Jalen Williams at plus 750 on DraftKings. SGA still a heavy favorite at minus 550, but the gap is certainly shrinking there. J-Dub averaged just under 22 points per game on the season, but something has definitely clicked in this series. We're seeing a big player rise to the occasion. We'll stay with the Oklahoma City Thunder here. Move to Chet Holmgren, 10-plus rebounds at plus 115. Chet has become quite the rebounder in this series. He leads the Thunder in rebounds per game at 9.6, double digits in three straight. How do you rate it?
Yeah, this one's a 4 out of 5 for me, Brandon, partially because of the price. You know, we're getting this at plus money, plus 115 at the DK Sportsbook. If this was minus 115, I think we'd be in 3 out of 5 territory, but the plus sign in front of that number is intriguing to me. And look, we talked about this on yesterday's show. Like, there's this kind of push and pull going on with Chet Holmgren where he's still struggling offensively. He's not really figured anything out on that end as the series has gone along. You know, nice win for the Thunder last night, but it was another pretty underwhelming game for Holmgren on the offensive end. He's not finishing well. You know, he's really bothered by the length, I think, of Miles Turner. Like, when I think of Chet Holmgren in this series, Brandon, I think of these just awkward drives that ends in him kind of just flipping something up at the rim. But we're not concerned about the scoring here. He's been excellent as a rebounder. He's been great defensively around the rim. And importantly, he has not been in foul trouble, which is huge. Like, there's been so many fouls for both teams in this series, but it's really been concentrated more so on the guards and the wings, you know, those reaches that we're seeing from OKC, and, you know, the same thing on the Indiana side. So even though Chet Holmgren continues to struggle on the offensive end, his minutes continue to trend up as the series has gone along. 35, 37, 34 minutes over the last three games, only played 24 and 28 minutes respectively in the first two. I thought Isaiah Hartenstein had his best game of the finals last night, but they continue to ride Chet Holmgren. And to me, this is more of a volume play than anything else. If you like Chet Holmgren to grab at least 10 boards, that's probably going to require him to play 30 plus minutes. And look, the way these last three games have gone, I think OKC sticks with that alignment.
Chet's showing me a lot about what he's made of. And this is what great players do. If they don't have it in one area, they lean heavier into another. Chet Holmgren showing just how well-rounded he is as a player and a teammate in doing what he's been doing in this series. Now, we haven't gotten a 5 yet, so maybe we can get one as we look the way of the Pacers' sixth man, TJ McConnell. One made 3. That's all we need at plus 280. Now, if you leave this guy wide open for several seconds, he can knock them down, but he's only going to give you about one attempt per game. So it comes down to Nick's confidence if he can get that thing in the rim. So, Nick, how do you rate that prop, TJ McConnell, at least one made 3?
4 out of 5, baby. 4 out of 5. We're getting this at almost 3 to 1. Come on. He's hit this in 5 of his last 7 games, 3 times in 5 finals games already. And look, he may require somewhere between 3 and 8 seconds to get a shot off, but OKC is fine letting him shoot that little set shot. He's like the human embodiment of a trebuchet. You know, got to wind it all the way up and then just kind of flick it at the rim. He took multiple threes last night for the first time in this series. And again, you know, you got so much to worry about with Indiana offensively that closing out on TJ McConnell from the perimeter is just not really a priority for OKC. I think if TJ McConnell reins in 5 threes or something like that in game 6, you just got to live with that if you're OKC. I know we're being baited a little bit here, especially after the game McConnell had overall last night, but I'm surprised this price is not a little bit lower. And look, we're talking about Halliburton maybe being compromised with that leg. Perhaps we see more of TJ McConnell in game 6. So if you give me this at plus 280, I will take that. We'll give it a 4 out of 5. All right, before we get over to the NFL, in fact, we will go right to the NFL. We don't have a read in this segment, Brandon. Look at that. Let's transition over to the NFL as we speak. I got some rate that props for you. We are looking at a handful of rookies. We'll start on the quarterback side of things. Brandon, rate that prop. Cam Ward, over 3,200.5 passing yards as a rookie, minus 110 at the DK Sportsbook.
I think I'm going to get some disagreement here from the panel, but I'm going to go with a 2. The average yardage that we see for a rookie quarterback in the NFL is significantly lower than 3,000 yards. Now, of course, you have to filter out quarterbacks who were taken late, some of which with a slightly less than impressive prospect profile. Last year does throw us off a bit, and it'll force a lot of people to take the over here. Bo Nix, Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels all went over. I don't like the receiving core here. Will Levis was under duress all season. I don't like the O-line either. This is a tough situation. So I think, you know, you said two is where you put some thought into it, but you don't play it.
Yeah.
That to me is this prop for Cam Ward.
I will say, Brandon, 19 quarterbacks hit that mark last season. Every quarterback who started at least 16 games got there fairly comfortably. So we'll see if that holds up in 2025. Maybe more so a matter of health than anything else for Cam Ward. All right, let's take a look at Ashton Jeanty. Brandon, rate that prop. Ashton Jeanty over 1,050 and a half rushing yards, minus 110.
We had to get a five on the board here. This is it. I'm giving this one my full stamp of approval. I couldn't love it anymore. You don't draft a running back top 10 if you're not going to give him a legitimate workload. And that goes for any team, any situation, any coach. But this situation makes it even more appealing. Ashton Jeanty is going to get all the work that he desires. Pete Carroll loves to run the football. And the Raiders don't really have much to work with in terms of receiving core help. Love Brock Bowers, but they should be able to run the ball plenty. Their offensive line, I think, to me, is industry standard. It's nothing special, but I don't think it'll hold Jeanty back too much. Don't look at last year's running backs for the Las Vegas Raiders, though, because that will make you want to throw up. Alexander Mattison led the group with 420 yards, but I like Jeanty to be a workhorse from day one.
Shout out to Sincere McCormick. I believe Amir Abdullah, those guys were starting games down the stretch for the Raiders. I'm with you on that one, man. That's close to a 5 out of 5 for me as well. All right, we'll finish out with Travis Hunter. Now, be careful, Brandon. Remember who you're talking to here. We do have a Jaguars fan in the house. Travis Hunter, over 725 and a half receiving yards as a rookie. What are you rating that?
All right, I'll make this one short and sweet. I'm going to give this one a one. This will be the lowest rating on the board. I don't know how we get to this number. Just for reference, I was looking at some of the other players that are around this range. Jordan Addison of the Vikings, Roma Dunze of the Bears, Khalil Shakir with Buffalo. We don't know that he's in this range. We don't even know that he's going to occupy wide receiver only this year. To me, absolute pass on Travis Hunter's receiving props.
All right. I had a feeling that's where we were going. All right, we got to transition over to the NHL. Paul Bruno from RotoWire, he's going to join us on the other side. Full Game 6 preview coming your way next on Prop Points.
You're watching Prop Points on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Back here on Prop Points on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Nick Whalen, Brandon Kravitz here with you. We got our friend Paul Bruno, hockey expert over at rotowire.com, the stats man. You can check him out on Twitter at statsman22. Paul joins us right now on the Progressive Guest Line. Paul, great to have you back for what could be the final NHL game of the season. The Florida Panthers with a chance to close things out tonight at home against the Oilers. Panthers minus 162. On the money line, we're seeing that total hold steady at 6.5, still giving us plus money if you like the over tonight. We'll get into that total in a moment, but we do have news in terms of the goaltending situation for Edmonton. Paul, Stuart Skinner will be back. He's going to start over Calvin Picard tonight. What do you make of that decision?
I think it's the right call, Nick. I mean, Skinner has been the number one guy each of the last two seasons. While he's slipped up a little bit in these playoffs, he's still the number one guy on the depth chart and the guy who has the larger resume in Edmonton the last two seasons. So this is butts against the banister time, and you got to go with your absolute best. And they're making the right call by going to Skinner, but I think the leash could be really short if he stumbles early. So how about that for covering myself there? I'm going with Skinner, but if he flubs two of the three first shots he faces, you'll see a quick hook.
Well, and I think that that could be heavily correlated to the over here if you do like it out there. And we've seen a lot of goals in this series. It's part of the reason why that short leash is there in the first place. The over is 5-0 to this point if you have been taking it. Is there any reason to look the other way, to grab the under at 6.5, or should we not overthink this one?
Brandon, I mean, it's hard to go against what we've seen. The eye test certainly tells you that there's lots of offense here on both sides. But I just have to think, with the stakes rising each game, and both teams will be gripping the stick a little bit tighter with the Stanley Cup in the building and so much at stake. Nobody wants to be on the highlight reels for the wrong reason with a bad giveaway and unsure play. So I think that's going to all factor into fewer scoring chances, lower shot totals. We saw that in the last game actually manifest itself, but we saw terrible goaltending too. And I just think that it's unlikely that we're going to see, if the shot totals are as low as they were last game, that we'll see the same number of goals. I'm calling for the under tonight in game six.
Well, Paul, you mentioned how much is on the line tonight, not just a second straight Stanley Cup for the Florida Panthers potentially, but I think the future of the Edmonton Oilers feels like it might be at stake tonight as well. If they lose this game, or even if they go on to a game seven and lose this series, what happens with Connor McDavid?
Boy, you've opened up a can of worms, and you want a spicy hot take. I'm telling you, he's playing out his option next year. He won't be an Oiler beyond next season. His contract will expire, and I've had two very well-placed sources tell me that he's not going to return to Edmonton. In fact, he's going to go to a team that he aspired to play with when he broke into this league, and it's in Toronto.
The Panthers are 6-1 following a loss in the postseason, and after taking game five, that's how they got there, but what is it about this Florida team? Now, of course, they're not off of a loss headed into this one tonight, so I don't know how much that factors in to this game, but just overall in the series, overall in what you've seen in the postseason, what is it about this Florida team that allows them to respond the way that they have?
Brandon, there was a very well-worn clip that I've seen repeatedly in these playoffs, and it dates back a long while to a game where Paul Maurice was letting his team have it early in a playoff round, and it might have been last year, where he said, you know, we got to hit these bleeping guys every bleeping chance that we get, and by the bleeping last couple of games in this series, we're going to have them dead to rights. And I think we've seen that in the three prior series that they've engaged in these playoffs, where they've out-hit the opposition and they've simply worn down the key players on the opposition side. So you can bet they're not going to let up now when they're one game away from that lovely skate around the rink and the summer of celebration that will follow. They can taste it. It's near. And they will ultimately be rewarded, they hope, for this relentless style of pressure that they apply with their hard-checking and relentless forecheck style of play that has worn out three teams before, and it's on the verge of paying off again against Edmonton tonight.
So, Paul, we talked to you about the future of the Edmonton Oilers. What about on the other side of things? Obviously, this is now three straight Stanley Cup Finals appearances for Florida. Good chance, you would think, over these next two games to make this two straight cups. How does this team stack up going forward, right? If you're following the NBA right now, we got the Oklahoma City Thunder feeling like maybe they're in the nation stages of what could be a dynasty. But how long could Florida keep this up?
I'm not sure about that, Nick. I mean, certainly they have a few key free agents to address, and two of them are leading the team in goal scoring these playoffs, in Marchand and Bennett. Both of them will hit the free agent group on July 1st. There's a lot of speculation that they may not be able to keep both of them. And you got to throw an Aaron Ekblad into that mix as well, a third high-ranked free agent that will be out there on the market. So that's three players. And then they've got in net a 36-year-old Sergei Bobrovsky, getting a little long in the tooth in terms of net mining, though he's shown no signs of slowing down in this playoff or last year for that matter. He's just playing the best hockey of his career. But you have to wonder, how long can he keep that up and playing as one of the busiest goalies in the NHL, certainly over the last 2 years, including the playoffs. So there are some looming question marks, but the well-worn thought is that the zero tax structure that these players face in Florida certainly gives them a leg up if they want to retain the services of these free agents. I just don't think they have the capacity to get all three of them inked. And so I expect that one of the two forwards will be let go. And I suspect that's going to be Brad Marchand, who's going to test the free agent waters. I think Bennett is going to sign a team-friendly deal. And I think that there's another question about the way they deal with Ekblad. And certainly the fact that they acquired a top-notch defenseman from Chicago to bolster their blue line, he might be the heir apparent to Ekblad there. And so there is some question and there is some volatility in what the Panthers may do, but it's certainly going to bear watching once this Stanley Cup is awarded.
I think that the fact that you bring up the no state income tax in Florida, it's no accident that we've seen the Tampa Bay Lightning and Florida Panthers be as successful as they've been. A two-part question for me about one of the names you brought up that's going to enter free agency, Sam Bennett. How much money has he made for himself during this postseason run? And could we be looking, if the Panthers do win tonight, will he be awarded Conn Smythe?
I think he's the favorite right now, and if he scores another goal tonight, I think it's a slam dunk. But if Brad Marchand outproduces him this evening, you might see the veteran winger be the upset winner of the Conn Smythe. But Bennett has certainly made himself a couple of million dollars over what certainly maybe even double what his expiring deal is at right now. So we could be looking at a guy who on the open market could get even as high as $10 million, and he might not have to ask Florida to get that much with the allusion that you made to the tax situation there. So a team like, again, we'll use a Canadian team, would have to bid like $11 million versus the $8 million that Florida could offer. And tax-wise, it would be the same outcome. So that's really what some teams that have a tax burden in their locales have to face vis-a-vis some of these cities like Dallas, and certainly Florida on the other side, who have the tax-free burden, if you will.
Folks, you want to make smarter football bets this season? It all starts with VSiN Pro. For a limited time, grab our football special at the early bird rate of just $175. Gives you full access from now through the Super Bowl. That includes our NFL betting guide, the ultimate playbook, with team breakdowns, power ratings, and season-long best bets. You also get a daily best bets email from our expert hosts and their guests, real-time betting splits from both DraftKings and Circa, live and on-demand shows via the VSiN Watch app, deep analytics and betting tools over at VSiN.com. Don't miss this early bird special. You can head over to VSiN.com/subscribe to lock in your early bird football special for just $175. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. All right, Paul, we got about a minute left. I need an official pick for this game, whether you're going money line, whether you're going puck line, and then real quickly, any goal scorers that you like for tonight?
I'm picking the Florida Panthers to win. I'm going on the puck line with a +160 payout. And I love some of these anytime goal scorer props when you consider that even the big names are going to give you a good return. Look at Draisaitl, the favorite on the board at +125. That's a pretty nice option. McDavid at +150. Everybody's saying he's got to have the game of his life. You can bet he'll be fired up. But how about the Florida side? +175 for Reinhart, +175 for Bennett, +220 for Marchand. All healthy payouts for the team that I expect to win this evening.
There we have it. Paul Bruno going with the Florida Panthers. You can check out all of his work for us over at rotowire.com. You can catch him on the RotoWire Hockey Podcast as well. You can find him on Twitter at Statsman22. Switching focus to Major League Baseball, when we come back, we'll have best bets for you for tonight's slate coming up on Prop Points.
You're watching Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back into Prop Points here on VSiN. Nick Whalen, Brandon Kravitz here with you for another 15 minutes, closing out the Tuesday show. But make sure you stick around after us. Make It Rain with Adam Schein coming up next. As always, he's going to have Zach Cohen from VSiN.com on the show, giving out his best bets for the NBA Finals, taking a look at Wednesday's tennis slate as well. So don't miss that. Follow the Money with Mitch Moss and Paulie Howard. That's coming up at 4 p.m. VSiN Primetime. Matt Eumanns and Will Hill on the mics tonight. That starts up at 7. All right, Brandon, let's take a look at the Major League Baseball slate. We had an abbreviated slate on Monday, a full slate coming our way tonight. No day games to worry about. Before we get into some of your favorite plays for tonight, do you want to talk about Shohei Ohtani's pitching debut? Dodgers get the win 6-3 over the San Diego Padres. Look, as expected, we didn't see a whole lot of Ohtani on the mound. Needed 28 pitches just to get out of that first inning. Gave up a couple of singles, gave up a run on a sacrifice fly, but I think you'll take it when he's topping out at over 100 miles an hour at another pitch that came in at 99.9. You know, Dave Roberts even said after the game, yeah, didn't really expect him to throw that hard, but I think the adrenaline was pumping regardless. Even if it was only one inning, even if it was only 28 pitches, great to see Shohei back on the mound.
I really wanted to fade him and his strikeout prop going into last night, but they set it at 1.5. So it just like, yeah. It would have taken, you know, some gumption to pull the trigger on that. Of course, a little bit of bet regret as he finished with 0 Ks on the day. Location was a major issue, and that is going to be the problem when you haven't pitched in a Major League Baseball game in over a year. But seeing the velocity there is something that the Dodgers and Dodgers backers should be very excited about whenever he does get on the mound. I think you've got one more fade in terms of the props left in him, and then after that, it'll be full steam ahead on Shohei Ohtani.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see who's on the mound tonight, by the way, for the Dodgers. Still no official announced starter as they continue to deal with so many injuries in that rotation. Did get news, though, that Emmett Sheehan will make his debut tomorrow night. So some help arriving for that Dodgers rotation in the form of both Sheehan and Ohtani. Let's take a look at the slate for tonight, Brandon. I know you want to start with one of the bigger mismatches on the schedule, the Pittsburgh Pirates visiting the best team in the American League, the Detroit Tigers. You got Bailey Falter going up against Casey Mize. How do you break this one down?
Oh, this has under written all over it. You get the under at 8 runs. The Pirates have been icy all season at the plate. They rank dead last in runs scored per game. Their last 5 games have gone under the total terms of the full game, and they take on a pitcher in Casey Mize who has not surrendered more than 2 runs but once in his last 5 appearances on the mound. So I like the under. You can find it in some places at +105. If you can get it mine at 8.5, I prefer the under at 8 at plus money or even money rather than an 8.5 at -120 or -130. I don't mind the push. I'd rather a slightly higher payout, especially for a game that this sort of game could very well end 2-1 tonight in either direction.
All right, there we go. We like an under in Detroit tonight. Let's take a look at the Minnesota Twins paying a visit to the Reds. This is David Festa going up against Andrew Abbott. Got the Reds as slight favorites on the money line. Both teams in the negatives here. -118 for Cincy, -103 for Minnesota. Festa got rocked a couple starts ago, gave up 8 earned to the Athletics, did get back on track last time out. And, you know, Abbott's been a little bit more steady throughout this season. I know you're looking at a team total here.
You know, it was exactly that. I was looking at the under. I don't hate it, but I do worry a little bit about the Reds bats, oddly enough, because they haven't exactly been the best hitting team in Major League Baseball this year. But the Twins team total, I'm going to buy it to 3.5 at the under. You can get that at +120. If you want to pay the juicier price, you can get it at 4.5. This team cannot put up runs right now. So this is just one of those where you're going to see the market settle around 8.5 or 9 in terms of the full game. We've seen a lot of fluctuations. I kind of want to see how that settles before I get into a full game market, but the Twins are cold. We know that. 3 runs or less in each of their last 4 games, and they take on a pitcher in Andrew Abbott. There's a reason why the Reds are favored here. It's coming off of a complete game shutout in his last appearance. So no reason to think that the Twins won't continue to have hitting woes tonight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have somewhat of a correlated play to that as well for this game. I'm looking at the over 5.5 strikeouts for Andrew Abbott. Like you said, Twins bats could not be colder right now. Got completely rocked by the Astros over the weekend. Prior to that, dropped 2-3 to the Rangers. Gave up a ton of runs in that series. The Twins struck out a combined 37 times in those 3 losses to the Astros over the weekend. Abbott, like you said, coming off of his best outing of the year against the Guardians. He's gone over this number 4 of his last 7 starts, 41 strikeouts to just 8 walks in that span. That's a 1.44 ERA in those last 7. Don't mind the under 9 here as well. If we're sticking with that correlation. All right, let's move on to Sox Mariners in the American League. Saw the Red Sox get a win, the first win of the post-Devers era last night. Walker Buehler on the mound tonight going up against Brian Wu. And look, you are on the Red Sox here, Brandon, to keep this thing going.
For sure. I mean, I think we're getting a little bit of we lean into this in football. When a coach gets fired, you just back the team in the very next game. Perhaps there's a little bit of that going on right now. The Red Sox are hot. They are hot with Devers. They remained hot without him. They've won six straight now. And I do like the situational angle, all jokes aside, of a team rallying on the road in the aftermath of the Devers trade. It can be one of those things that brings a group together, because it's them versus the world kind of thing. You do have to be concerned with Brian Wu on the mound for the Mariners, but we've also seen him slip a bit as of late, which makes me really like this play. 9 earned runs over his last two games. He's taken 4 consecutive losses on his record. So I'm going to back the surging Sox with Walker Buehler on the bump tonight.
All right, let's stick in the American League, specifically in the AL East. We got the Orioles at the Tampa Bay Rays. Dean Kramer taking on Zach Littell. Looking at a strikeout prop here.
Dean Kramer is one of my favorite bets in either direction throughout the course of the season. I feel like he's a pretty easy read to figure out. His ERA is bloated away from home. So if you want to look the way of the over in a smaller park in Tampa, I don't blame you there either. There's a reason why this total is going to sneak up to about 10 runs before we get to first pitch tonight. But his K rate actually improves when he's away from home. So he's really all or nothing outside the walls of Camden Yards. And the Rays strikeout rate as a team is in the bottom half of the league. He's had more than 7 in 2 of his last 3 outings. I took an alt line on this also at least 7 strikeouts at plus 350, a little sprinkle on that as well. But I think he's got a really good shot at surpassing 4.5 tonight.
All right, I'll get a little outside of my comfort zone here, Brandon, and give you a couple baseball plays for tonight. We don't have NBA back until Thursday, all right? So we got to fire on something. I like the Cubs money line tonight at home against the Milwaukee Brewers. Don't even mind looking at the under 3.5 team total for Milwaukee. Ben Brown on the mound tonight for Chicago. He is coming off a shaky start. He's had a few blowups this season. Kind of seems to alternate great starts and terrible starts, but I think he'd take advantage of this Brewers lineup that, even in some recent wins, just has not been piling up runs whatsoever. So give me the Cubs money line. And looking at James Wood, 3+ hits plus runs plus RBIs tonight. Gone over this number in 3 of his last 5. Beautiful matchup for the Washington Nationals at home against Colorado, and Antonio Senzatella putting that 1-10 record on the line. Actually did pitch fairly well against Washington early in the season, but an 8.64 ERA over his last 9 starts. We got to give you some best bets of the night before we head out. Those are brought to you by our friends over at GBank. Introducing the $500 trifecta from GBank, First Bet, and VSiN. All you have to do is open a GBank Visa Signature credit card, and in the first 90 days, deposit and play through $1,000 at First Bet to trigger the $500 trifecta. You get $200 in cashback rewards on your GBank Visa Signature credit card. First Bet will give you a $100 deposit match, and VSiN completes the trifecta with a free VSiN Pro subscription. Brings you all the way to October 31st. That's a $200 value. The $500 trifecta from GBank, First Bet, and VSiN. Head over to VSiN.com/GBank. That's VSIN.com/GBank. This one-time promotion is limited to customers opening a new account in response to this offer and will not apply to requests to convert existing accounts. Apply today. Terms and conditions apply. All right, Brandon. Best bet of the night. Where are we heading?
I hate to fade our guest on today's show, but Paul Bruno, I'm sorry. We're going in opposite directions here. Over 6.5 goals scored in game 6 between the Panthers and the Oilers. Game 5, sort of lucky to get the over there with the Oilers going with an empty net situation. But the fact is that these two teams are so good offensively. It takes 5 goals to get a win in this series. We've only seen 1 game where the winner has scored less than 5, and that game went over also. 5-0 to the over. If they're going to give us this at cheaper than minus 110, I got to take it.
All right, well, somebody's coming away a winner. It's either going to be you or Paul. Give me the under 8.5 in Royals-Rangers tonight. Rangers have gone under this number in 5 of the last 7 starts for Jack Leiter, 8 of 11 overall this season. That's going to wrap up the Tuesday edition of Prop Points. Keep it right here. Make it rain coming your way next on VSiN.